come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday night, it happens right here on your internet radio dial, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and many others, everywhere you can find us. Also on Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, and on Twitter, @SatFreakShow. If you like what you hear here, leave us a star rating, or let us know what you think. I'm Colin. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars, including
Jenny,
Nick,
Travis.
And tonight we watch Travis's movie pick. What did we watch, Travis?
The Fly Part 2 from 1989, directed by Chris Wallace.
Who's Chris Wallace?
He did the special effects for the first Fly.
And I want to say he also did Gremlins. He created the Gremlins.
Yeah, he created Gremlins.
Okay.
And the Fly.
The Fly. Can he do anything else like that we know of?
He might have worked on Hellraiser 2. That's why Christopher Young did the music for this. Maybe.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. I'd have to reference that, which he would do before a show.
So this was his first, we're going to say his first directorial gig. Having worked on the first one, I was like, hey, we want to do a sequel to The Fly.
And we don't want to pay anybody any money for it. So how would you like to direct it?
And we know there's going to be a creature effect in here. So you know creature effects. You should direct the movie. That's kind of how
it starts. You know, they do usually say a special effects guy directs, you know, the portions that are special effects anyway. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, The First Fly is a movie directed by David Cronenberg from 86, and it's a fucking classic. You should check that one out for sure. But in it, Jeff Goldblum, it's based on the Vincent Price 50s movie where a guy gets gene spliced with a fly, basically, he invents a teleporter. And
gene splices, and he just switches a head
in the first,
and a
in the
leg.
50s. Yeah.
Or a head and an arm. Help it really me. Wasn't even, yeah.
Help me.
Because the little fly had the.
So they remade it in 86, which was just kind of, it was an odd way. I mean, it was a cool updating of it, you know. I mean, the idea that instead of, you know, once you get spliced with a fly, your head doesn't become like a fly head. You don't transfer body
parts. Swapped.
Yeah, in the 50s.
Yeah, they didn't really gene splice. They swapped a head and a leg.
Yeah, but the 50s one, you know, I mean, it's like, it's okay. It's a decent kind of '50s monster movie. Mm-hmm. But the 80s one is like...
Oh, yeah. That's the one.
I mean, it had the original Fly had that whole, you know, the dude wore the fucking cloth over his head the whole movie. So when his wife got upset enough to snatch it off, then, oh, my God, a fly!
There's a fly!
Yeah, I remember that. That was pretty cool.
It was really cool.
Vincent Price, he said, is in it, but he's not the guy who actually switches the head and body parts of the fly.
Yeah, he, like, tells the story or something.
And Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis are in Cronenberg's The Fly, and that the setup of that movie leads us into this one, where because he's been gene-spliced with the fly, the idea that the teleporter can't determine... Like, he builds a teleporter, but the problem with it is that it doesn't understand that you can have two different DNA sequences in the machine at the same time. So it fuses them together, and then through the movie, he molts into this, you know, or transforms into this creature that's partially human, partially fly, but at a DNA level.
And while having sex with Gina Davis.
And that gives us, well, even in the first one, I guess, you know, they kind of, she gets pregnant.
Yeah, it's all about aborting the fetus of a deformed man.
Right.
You know, that's what like, the whole story kind of turns into. Like, I want it out of my body.
Yeah.
We don't know what it's going to be. Could be a fly.
Well, you were saying, too, that the first one's kind of like an allegory for, like, cancer or something. It's someone who's dealing with a terminal illness. Is the way the movie plays.
Yeah, you're like a leper and shit like that. Yeah. Your body falling off.
Yeah.
But this movie just goes straight up monster movie.
Yeah. So in this movie, then it picks up right, whatever, 9 months after the first one.
Which probably even sooner than that if it's a accelerated growth.
Mm. Minus Gina Davis.
Yeah. Gina Davis was too good for this.
Well, her character...
Thanks, but no thanks.
It's not spoiling anything, but her character dies on the operating table within the first minute, the credits. Yeah.
That's why she turned it down. She said that she didn't have any character depth to the character for this movie, so she turned it down.
Well, I wonder... because I was just looking at the writing credits on the movie, and it seems like it went through like a number of different hands before we got to the one that, you know, we saw here. The original idea was created by Mick Garris. Mick Garris is known in horror circles for doing, you know, like the Masters of Horror. He's a giant horror movie fan. Mm-hmm. And I think he had done Critters too.
Yeah.
Prior to this. And so he wrote the original, I'm assuming, screenplay, which was rewritten by Jim and John Wheat, who had just come off of Predator. They wrote Predator at this point.
I thought that was like Jim Thomas.
Or Thomas. Was it Thomas? Did I say Wheat? Yeah, Jim and John Thomas, I want to say. It was the guys who wrote the movie Predator. And then that was rewritten by Frank Darabont, who did Walking Dead and The Mist and The Blob and Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and all that. But I'm guessing that the script that Gina Davis turned down was one of those previous, you know, by those previous writers, and then they said,
well, she's not in it, so let's just whack her off in the beginning here.
Right.
Well.
So Eric Stoltz plays...
Martin Brundle.
Which is now the accelerated fly kid.
He's the fly boy.
Yeah. Fly boy.
And I'm assuming he got cast because he had done Mask with Cher, where he, like, wore a lot of makeup.
That could be, man.
I figured because he didn't have anything going on because he got kicked out of Back to the Future.
Oh, right. Zing!
Right. And they did call him Marty in the movie. The security guard goes, hold on there, Marty.
Ouch.
Well, I think he is a weird enough, you know, if you're supposed to believe that this kid has only grown up in a scientific environment, I mean, I think Eric Stoltz is that dude somehow, you know?
He's kind of creepy.
He's fucking weird. He's a weirdo kid.
But he also kind of, he's able, as an actor, he's one of these guys who can, I mean, I can see why you'd gravitate toward him for this type of role, because he projects some kind of intelligence, right? I mean, that's what the character has to be. It's like, you're the son of a super genius.
And you got to be an uber super genius.
Yeah. So he's raised, and he's accelerating in his growth. I want to say, like, you know, by the time he's 5 years old in this movie, he's Eric Stoltz.
Mm-hmm.
Another actor plays him before this, but he's adopted by a corporation,
Bartok Industries. Those are the people that Seth Brundle was pretty much getting money for the telepods. Like, the Bartok was going to own the telepods anyway. Once Seth Brundle got him to work.
Did they, in the first movie, I don't remember. I mean, I remember the first movie pretty well, but maybe I'm blanking out. Like, did they ever say what Bartok Industries, like, what they were all about? Because in this movie, it seems like they've got, you know, specimens. Yeah.
In this movie, they're like Monsanto. You know? I mean, they...
Sorry.
I mean, even in the movie, when the whole plans are revealed to that Bartok wants Martin to turn into the fly, and they say, once we figure out the telepods, Bartok Industries will control the form and function of every living organism on the face of the earth. I mean, they are like a Monsanto, like people
say, what did that mean? What did you get?
Well, I mean, that's why I call them Monsanto. You know, even now Monsanto is the real corporation that's patenting every living life form. They're destroying real tomatoes, but patenting their tomatoes, and those are going to be the only tomatoes in the world, Monsanto tomatoes. So that's what Bartok is.
That's an interesting take. See, I didn't get that out of the movie, but maybe that's like, so if we can sequence everyone's DNA through the teleporters, we can patent it.
Yeah, we can, you know, we will, yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
For sure.
For a movie concept. I was kind of confused by the, at one point, you know, because, I mean, in the original movie, which I think we have to consider because this is the sequel to it. That, you know, they set up that this is a you know, a teleporter, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to revolutionize travel. You can beam from here to there, mm-hmm. be broken down here and reconstructed here. And this movie, they talk about, like, do they ever really talk about them as teleporters? Because the original thing that I remember the guy talking about was, like, that you were going to be able to revolutionize surgery. Imagine surgery where you don't have to cut people open anymore.
Microbiology, and they were thinking bigger.
So it'd be, we would deconstruct your DNA here, hold you in the computer, fix what's wrong with you, and reconstruct you over here with that problem eliminated.
Yeah,
that's actually, now that we're sitting here talking about it, I think coming out. I don't know if that's clear in the movie. If you guys got,
because I remember in the original one it was supposed to be just teleporting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well.
So, but in this one, he figured out that, you know, you could take good DNA from one person and then get rid of your bad DNA and put it in the other guy, and you're whole again. So.
Yeah. We'll have to get to that because
clincher.
I have some thoughts on that. But the so they've rescued the telepods from the Jeff Goldblum movie. And I want to say that he had three in that movie. There were two with the transparent doors and one the prototype.
One was the prototype that he used to be the...
And that's the one that they have in this movie. They've got the original one and the prototype one with the opaque door. Because Brundle destroyed, I think, the middle one at the end of the first movie. Oh. So they've got these telepods, and they're trying to, you know, like, figure out how to get them to work. Because the conceit of the movie is that because Brundle, Jeff Goldblum, is dead, somehow the instruction set for how this works, it was lost.
Yeah, because they always use, like, poetic science, right? The whole, like, I have to teach the computer to love the flesh, you know, babies, you know, grandma's pinching babies, and then this, he talks about how, Eric Stoltz talks about how the scientist, oh God, how the fuck did he put it? What did he say? He's like, they were asking the right question. It wasn't until they, you know, I was just like, what the fuck?
They were thinking about it logically or something like that, but they had to step back. See the beauty of it.
Yeah, the beauty. It's like,
That wasn't as good.
Is that science?
I need to teach the computer to love, to get excited about the flesh.
Yeah, like, what?
Well, that was one of the things, I guess, that was bothering me about the movie, was the idea that, like, in the first movie, they solve the problem that this movie has for at least an hour. You know, it's like whenever we put anything into the teleporter, it appears on the other side as goop. Mm-hmm. You know, even when we're putting, you know, live dogs in it, they're coming out the other side all fucked up. Yep. It's not explaining why, because I guess in the first one, he puts a monkey through and it comes through.
And
like,
it comes inside out. Yeah.
Because
the thing doesn't know how to reconstruct it correctly. So he solves that in the original movie, like halfway through it, right? Like, those are working teleporters. He goes through multiple times, and, you know, he just didn't, you know, teach it that there could be two separate patterns in the thing. So in this movie, it's like everybody's forgotten how to do that. So it's like we have to go back to where the original movie started and it's try, like, to figure out again.
Something for Brundle or Martin to work on, basically, right?
Yeah.
When Bartok... gives him his own job. It's basically to basically finish his father's work.
Yeah, because they can't. They're at a log jam. Like, they can't figure this out. So it's like, maybe if we get the kid to do it. The head of the company is Mr. Bartok. And he adopts the kid, and he says, "You'll call me Mr. Bartok, and I'm going to be your dad." And
yeah, but he's like, "Think of me as your dad."
He's Mr. Bartok. He never has a first name. I just thought that was weird.
Well, I thought it was weird that the absolute head of the company would take such a personal, like, it's like Bartok Industries. This is Mr. Bartok. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
but I think that's what I've always liked about this movie when it comes to, like, the separation between the first Fly and this one. It's just the idea that This is just the idea of a kid growing up in a just a scientific, like just a science as a science project, kind of without knowing it. And you got this big corporation guy that's posing as a loving father just to kind of get him through, like, whatever tests or, you know, just to, you know, he wants Martin Brundle to trust them, you know, unquestionably. So, you know, I think it's time I meet him. And, you know, it makes a personal connection with this guy, whereas Martin Brundle's never met his father. He's got this kind of corporate head posing as a father. Mm. And then you got that kind of cool part where Martin finds the animal test laboratory and he kind of befriends that dog. And then he sees the dog get tested on the transportation device and become all mutilated. And somehow, I mean, it's kind of weird that somehow that doesn't like really mess up their relationship. I mean, I guess just you're supposed, because that's kind of the sequence where he goes from being a child to Eric Stoltz. So they kind of skip over whatever kind of arguments they would have had over that. You know, they have that one scene where the guy just like, oh, you still don't like, you know.
He's like, well, we took care of the dog. You know, there was no suffering.
Yeah, they even tells him he killed the dog, which he finds out he didn't.
That always, lying bastard. That's like the worst thing he can do is tell a kid that.
I've always liked that scene when he refines the dog. It's like, here's Eric Stoltz crying over a fucking ugly puppet, you know? I think that's acting. You know, that's fucking acting.
Yeah.
That's an ugly puppet.
Yeah. It'd been a long time since I've seen this movie, and, you know, I forgot 95% of it. But I remember that damn dog. I don't know if it just traumatized me as a kid or what, but I remember that nasty tongue hanging out the side, you know, the gangly eyeball just like out there.
Eyeball. It's trying to like slurp its food out of
it. It's making a
nasty fucking
like soup. Fucking biscuits and gravy.
Yeah, right.
so out of this whole movie, that's the one thing. The one thing I remember is that damn dog.
Yeah.
Fucking touching.
Well, maybe we can talk about our characters really quick, like our main characters and what their goals are in this movie. That'll like illuminate the plot here, where they're going. But we've got our main character is Martin Brundle. So he's the test subject.
Son of the fly.
And his goal in the movie, I guess, is to suffer and eventually become
the fly.
The fly, too.
So the fly, yeah. As well.
Yeah. The fly.
So he can bug a lot of people. So in captivity, he meets
Beth Logan.
Played by Daphne's
the Druish princess.
Vespa.
Yeah. Princess Vespa
from Spaceballs.
Oh my god. That cracks me up.
And she is a maintenance worker.
She works at night.
Yeah,
she's always a janitor.
Only maintenance are working at night.
So she's like,
but it was like data maintenance, wasn't it? I don't know.
She was fly fishing.
It wasn't like.
Yeah, because she's bored.
Yeah.
Fly fishing.
She was fly fishing in the office.
She's a real country gal.
They strike up a relationship, I guess, because of is she the only girl of approximately the same age that he's ever met? I'm going to go with yes.
Yeah.
That works in this laboratory. And so then, you know, he's just kind of giving her clearance to this top secret project that he's working on. And like, hey, you can help me work on it. Mm-hmm. She's a maintenance engineer.
Well, he's never had friends. He's looking for a friend.
Yeah.
Because he's five. He's
more than that.
Well, he is five.
Chicken brown.
When you're five, you want to, you know.
Yeah.
Once you reach that age.
So a touching love story takes place between the two of them.
It's not really touching. Mm. It's just like something to mirror the Gina Davis.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have to have
Jeff
someone
Goldblum.
Because you need someone who can break down in tears whenever your main character is going through this
He's turning into a monster. She has to be like, oh my God.
Yeah. I'm helpless. What can I do? But it's never done with the same kind of resonance in the first movie, right? Because I think that was...
No, like they got that weird Katie Lang dance. I mean, that's it, right? They
that's the montage,
they,
right?
They dance to Katie Lang.
The meet cute montage.
Yeah, she kind of helps. Yeah. He, like, pushes buttons, looks at her. She looks at him and shakes her head. No. That's the science of this movie.
Yep.
She shows him music by putting earphones on his head.
I've never heard this before.
What? Outside world.
That's right. Because did we establish he doesn't get out? He's basically property of Bartok.
So even though he doesn't realize it. That's what I don't get. It's like, so wait a second. You realize how the corporation fucking fucked up your dog, but you're okay with it. You realize how you can't leave anywhere, but you don't realize how you're like...
Because he doesn't know any different. What is that? That Munchausen syndrome? Right?
Yeah. Munchausen?
Yeah.
Munchausen syndrome.
Munchausen? I don't know.
Munchausen by proxy? I'm just throwing terms out. That's a thing. Munchausen syndrome. Some kind of megalomania? Yeah. I don't know.
So he doesn't know.
You identify with your captors.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You don't really trust them.
His captors being Mr. Bartok, first name.
And the two other scientists that are dicks to him for 5 years, you know? That fucking lady and that skinny dude. They have no patience for this person from the get-go. That was a little weird.
Are we supposed to feel sympathy that when they get killed? Spoiler.
I don't think so. That's supposed to be your Friday 13th, like, all right.
That's your payoff.
Dickhead scientist, you know.
You knew they were going to get it at the end. So. Yeah.
Especially the nerdy guy. He was too much of a dick. Mm-hmm. He'd, like, smile when Martin, like, gets, you know, goes through pain and shit like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's you're sitting there watching this movie and you're like, why are these people just such... douches.
Hurry up and turn into a fly. That's what they... fucking kid.
I guess, right?
We're just waiting for this fly thing to come around.
I mean, the father figure, you know, I mean, he's initially like, you know, we're going to give you your own room and, you know, we're not going to, you know, as you grow up and mature, you know, it's like, you know, you're going to get a little more freedom and personal space and all this other stuff, which is revealed to be a lie eventually. It's like all this guy wants is for him... Martin to turn into a fly creature and then to study it. That's his entire goal in life. How this is going to help him sequence the human genome, I don't know, because like after you become a fly, you can't really solve the whole mystery of teleportation.
Well, because that way they're already moved on to like gene splicing and whatnot. I don't think they're that worried about
Maybe he wants to like make an army of fly guys.
For sure.
And sell it to the government.
Basically, yeah, it's going to turn into like island of Dr. Moreau sort of thing.
You create a new, you know, military man.
You want leopard people?
Yes.
That is kind of what the third fly was. The Curse of the Fly?
They made a third one?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Curse of the Fly. Oh, okay. But that was more about, like, that's what it turned more into, like, gene splicing, which I think that's, you know, what this whole series turned more into in a weird way.
It's like a, at least the first one I always read is kind of like, you know, it's the allegory for finding the atom bomb, right? Man finds this, technology, which is awesome, and you know, can break someone down and rebuild them or teleport them, and it's like we have to fear it. And so, at the end of the first movie, I want to say they were like, fuck this guy up and turned him into a fly. We have to destroy it. We have to get rid of it. I mean, that's like the 50s way that you do it. It's like if you build this thing, your technology fucks with you, you destroy it. You don't figure out how to do it better the next time or anything. It's like no. This has to be destroyed. We can't. We've been playing around in God's world, and, you know, only God is the master of his domain. Man has no part being there. The remake in this one doesn't really take that same...
No way. Yeah, because this is, I think, more realistic, right? I like when Bartok says, you know, he's explaining the scientists, like, all you scientists will answer directly to this lady doctor, and she'll answer to me. And I just answer to God. Yeah. So from God's lips to you. I thought that was genius. Because, Bartok, like I said, once again, with that whole controlling the form and function, Bartok is acting as he understands that he's going to watch this thing turn into a fly. Like, regardless of whether they should kill it or not, he's going to watch this thing turn into a fly, no matter if it's a bastard of creation or whatever, you know. They are taking the next step in finding out basically the next step of human evolution, really.
Well, if you add certain alien
DNA to it. Right. Which is, kind of what we've been doing with food, right? How are we going to make apples last in a colder weather where we'll put, like, fish cells in it, you know, or shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I also wonder, this isn't a slight on this movie, but, obviously it's a movie where the corporate guys are the villains. You know, corporate guys are always the villains. I'm like, just once, I want to see, like, just for the punk nature of doing it, I want to see the movie where the corporation saves the day. And not that I agree with this, but I'm like, as a movie, it'd be like, that would be a shocker, right? The corporate guys are actually good. Well, it's the Gremlins, too.
Yeah, Gremlins too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clamp.
Yeah, where you're like, Clamp's obviously the dick in this movie.
Exactly.
He's the guy at the top. No, he's actually kind of cool. Yeah.
He's just happy about technology.
Yeah. And rounding out our cast, not that we're done with these guys, but we'll come back to them, but rounding out our cast is the super douche, the
mean janitor, guy. Scobie.
Is he a janitor?
No, he's a security guard.
At one point, so this guy does nothing but fuck with our lead characters in a way that's like, there's no human resource department at this place.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, he's sexist, he's misogynistic, he's
watching their homemade porns.
He's just basically an asshole for the sake of being an asshole.
He's like TV bad guy.
Yeah.
The first scene, like, because we don't see him this whole movie. Not even when he, like, maybe he would have, like, done something if we'd seen him, like catch young Martin Brundle when he, like, breaks into the different security. But we only see him when Eric Stoltz comes into play, and his first scene is like, look, it's Bartok's little pet. You know, it's just like, okay, this guy's just like classic 80s bad guy. Just, I hate that jerk.
But don't worry, he'll get his.
One of these days are going to come. And he's playing with a little taser gun.
Yeah. Okay, so this is like the rule of drama, as we were talking about, I think, before on one of these shows. If you show a gun in the first act, you have to pay it off in the last act. So the fact that this guy's introduced with this
taser.
It's like, okay, this taser is going to be like a big fucking deal, like later on. Right? Somehow, is there a payoff to that?
Yeah, well, for a second.
They use it. But it wasn't like, cool scene.
Yeah, it wasn't like it ended everything, like, caused an explosion or something like that.
I made somebody's head explode.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm going to hold on to this, put you in water, and tase this.
Yeah, exactly.
I was kind of disappointed by that.
And it was like one of the worst falls, too, when she got tased. She was like, oh. And she like falls into the computer slightly.
The end set of this movie, the big like corporate room where all this shit happens, you know, where the lab.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Remind anybody else of Halloween 3? Some reason, I get that out of
my head. It was like it's sequel lighting. It's like you guys earlier. You guys said this movie had 80s stank. It's like no, it has sequel stank. It has that. We'll only pay this much money to get it done. Most of it better be in like daylight with all the lights, or at night with all the lights on. There's like no dramatic lighting.
It's one set for 75% of this movie.
But it's a soundstage, so it's huge. It's a big room with electronic components like scattered
about.
It's not like crowded together. It's like all wide open, like you see in, I guess, like 80s and 90s, like movies. I'm trying to think.
An 80s and 90s movie.
Isn't it like when? I'm thinking specifically of that the lab you know, where they have the Stonehenge stuff in Halloween 3, but I've seen this in, like, something else where you've got, like, this big room with, like, gray, you know, cement floors and cement walls, and we've got, like, the mainframe computer with the reel-to-reel, like, yeah. And, you know, nothing else.
We have a computer.
Species?
So, yeah, that's the one that I kept thinking of, you know, that this, you know, kind of reminded me of was the Species. And, you know, because... You know, when they have the, I believe it's Species 2, right? Where they have the little girl.
Wait.
Right?
Wait, you saw Species 2?
I thought Species 2, they had like a guy. Isn't there a guy running around Species 2?
I don't remember.
Like a male alien? You guys are losing me. Well, Species 1. Species 1.
Is that the one with the little girl?
Yeah, okay. And Ben Kingsley is like the Bartok character.
Yeah, right? And that was like a big, you know... laboratory set.
They always have to have a big laboratory set. I think that's just how it is.
It's 20th Century Fox.
Was Species 20th Century Fox? Oh my God, if that wasn't. MGM. Yeah, well. Pulled that one out of my ass. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess what, you know, you pay your money to see this movie because, I mean, obviously it's being called The Fly, too. So at some point you're going to get, and it's directed by the makeup effects guy. So you're going to get monster action,
which you didn't get in the first movie. In the first movie, you only got like
makeup effects action.
You got the whole like his face splitting and turning into a fly. You know, you get a little bit of, but it really saved everything for the last like 15 minutes, right? Where this is going to give you a good, like, nope, the last half an hour is going to be the fly going around spitting in people's faces.
But was it good?
I think it was fun. It's got like I to this day I swear that the vomit drop on that one dude's face that was screaming, pulling up.
That was
that's
like
one of the best shot things of the late 80s, man.
That was like the best shot of the whole movie was with the acid on the guy's face, and you could still see it like breathing and screaming at the same time.
I'd second that one. That's comparable only to Wolf Cop. Am I right?
Nah.
Isn't there a scene where he rips the guy's face off in Wolf Cop and you see like skeleton underneath screaming?
But that was more cartoony. This is fucking like, I mean, this you actually see. I mean, it's always thrilled me just because you actually see like the melting of the skin and the opening of the jaw as he's like screaming and he's kind of clutching at the flesh and like pulling away. It's just like, holy
fuck. The payoff for me though is watching him on the floor. You know, he's still breathing and everything. They're like, call the medic, call the medic. I'm like, this dude is done. There's no helping this guy.
He just puts a painting on.
Don't want to live after that.
He can take his face
off. He's going to come back as Darkman or something.
I think he can do that. I mean, there is a substantial amount of makeup work on Eric Stoltz, I think, like through, what are we saying, at least 20 minutes of the movie once he actually begins to transform into the fly. So there's like these gradual stage increases, which, well, okay, I don't want to compare it to the first one. But I mean, just looking at this, it's like what they're doing is like, you know, his eyes start getting kind of sallow and sunken in, then his skin gets a little scaly, he starts sprouting weird hairs. Until a point when he's like pretty much in a full body makeup, you know, going into like a cocoon. So he'll eventually mold into a puppet, like a full animatronic creature. And that's like at that point where he's, you know, he says something to the effect of like, you know, I'm not getting worse. I'm getting better. You know, it's been like I've been deteriorating up until now, but now I know what's happening. I'm getting stronger.
I was like an open wound.
Which is reminiscent of the first movie, except it seems like, you know, you have to have seen the first movie like because it informs this one, right? I mean, like this one can't exist by itself because like even the vomit drop is like a thing which is explained in the first movie. And in this movie, he's spraying shit. Like, if you hadn't seen the first movie, right, at all, and all of a sudden this guy's shooting white crap at people that dissolves their faces, you'd be like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Right?
Because you understand how, I mean, even in the earlier scene when they go visit Stathis, you know, he talks about getting his hand melted and his foot melted.
the bad puns.
On our roundup of characters. Stafford Torrance is the only returning character from the first movie. So he was a
I'd give my right hand to get...
He cost me an arm and a leg.
He was a publisher of the science magazine. Particle. That Gina Davis works for.
Pulled that one out of a hat, too.
I figured out what I recognized him from. It was he was one of the attorneys in The Social Network. And then he said a lot of... I think he was Jesse Eisenberg's attorney.
Oh, wow.
But he was one of the attorneys, and then he's done a bunch of TV stuff like Law and Order, and
so he is still working, still has a career.
He's just done like an episode here and there of popular TV shows, but that's where I recognize him because I saw him and I'm like, I've seen him, but he's older in what I saw him in.
Yeah, well, he's the recipient of the original Fly's like worst and most hideous, I think, makeup effects. You know, because the fly spits up on his hand and melts it, spits up on his leg, and is about to spit up in his face. And that kind of made me think about, in this one, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Vomit drop is this thing that a fly, like, spits up to dissolve its food before it eats it.
Exactly.
But this creature doesn't do that. It uses it kind of like, raptors in Jurassic Park, or not the raptors.
The rattler guys, the Dennis.
Yeah, he just spit as a defensive kind of thing. But
just remember that when a fly lands on your burger, and you take a bite of it,
the fly has puked on your burger.
Yeah.
Stathis is in this movie crazy. I don't know. Like
he's a drug. Kinda,
I'm still trying to figure out exactly what Eric Stoltz. Expects to, you know, at the point where he leaves Bartok, Eric Stoltz's character leaves Bartok, you know, like, and flees, you know, he's got the disease and he's like searching for a cure. So he tracks down this character from the first movie, and you're like, but what is
Eric Stoltz knows? Like, the computer tells him basically what the computer explains to Seth Brundle in the first movie that, oh, you can swap out your mutant DNA with the healthy DNA of a second person and just like leave all the mutated crap with them. But he's like, no, I can't do that. I can't take a life. So I think he's trying to find out maybe if his father knew another way, but you know, he pretty much just learns, no, his father figured out the same thing, that if he like, he could like...
Actually, I'm trying to think now. Did he get that information from the computer, or he had to go to Stathis to get that information?
No, because Stathis just told him, oh, your father was going to, like, your father just went crazy and was going to, you know, splice him with your mother and you.
Yeah, because he knew that.
One perfect, like, you know.
He knew he needed, you know, because he was, like, full, like, human when he was finding out that he needed, you know, another DNA to swap out his bad DNA. And when he went to the guy's house, you know, he was already deteriorating.
I'm trying to think if this violates the whatever was set up in the original movie. I know, like, as I was watching this tonight, I was thinking, like, this is the one real addition to the fly mythology that the first movie skimped out on, right? The first movie explained to us, like, what's going to happen here is this fucking guy has got this idea that he's going to take you, me, and the baby and put them all in the same pod and then come out the other side as like one in one body. More human than I am myself or whatever, right? And you're like, that's fucking horrible. And then, of course, you know, Stathis comes to the rescue and shoots the, you know, telepod when it's happening. So we never get to see what happens. Mm-hmm. So this movie is like, we're going to show you what actually happens. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I don't know if that was what was going to happen, right? That it was going to, because you'd think that the mutant DNA would still be in this, you know, this new life.
It was just going to be more human to cancel out
the
fly.
But this movie says you can just take another person, another human subject, and gene splice it with you and transfer the DNA, the mutant DNA, into the other person.
I think it would work, but you still need that third pod. That's the only problem with this whole you need that third pod. You can't just like suck them in and then somehow it gives it all to the asshole. Like, oh, I know, the Bartok's the bad guy. Let's give him the fly DNA.
Right, yeah, that was kind of random. It was like, well, I'm glad the right person got the bad DNA.
Yeah, you got a 50-50 chance of coming out at the right end on this one.
You're right. Holy fuck, I totally forgot about that. He had a third pod in the first movie and they totally fucked that up. interesting. So I guess, you know, Eric Stoltz, you know, to back up, he goes into the cocoon, which is this big, like, it sits on a table in a room that really doesn't have lax security and little quarantine measures because it's all full of pustules and oozing and sitting there. We're waiting for the fly creature to erupt from it at some point. And when it does, of course, it's this, you know, Chris Wallace puppet.
Yeah.
And so this is the thing where I was like, I guess I got to tell you, I know you said you like this, but I was like kind of sitting there going like, the design of the thing, maybe because they show it so much, looks, you know, it looked to me kind of robotic and very animatronic and very puppet-like. And I was just sitting there comparing it to the first one, where it's like, I know that they barely showed up, right? Oh, basically, the Brundle fly
and
thing
it just
flops out. Yeah. Oh, no, right.
It like limps after Gina David. I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, it's all close-ups. It's all, you know, they tried to do a lot with this puppet. You know, they tried to have
fly
it. Too. Yeah, Fly 2, they really tried to make it more of an action puppet, you know?
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'd have to say, I'm sorry, everybody out there that hates CG. Well, here you go. This is the movie why they created CG. It's like, oh, that way you don't have to show the top half of a puppet and the bottom half of a puppet separately. Yeah. You know? There you go.
Yeah, because I just thought the puppet was very very stiff and, you know,
just kind of turned.
Very robotic. It was like,
yeah. It didn't have a whole lot of articulation in the face. I was kind of sitting there going like, well, would you give it some kind of humanoid appearance so you can at least see Eric Stoltz in the sculpt.
That there would be some human.
It was in the eyes.
Feel to it.
I mean, I guess you didn't see Jeff Goldblum in the fly creature from the original movie, but somehow, I mean, just the way that those scenes at the end of The Fly were orchestrated, there was like an emotional weight to them, you know, that was kind of missing from this. It's like in the original Fly, the special effects were serving the, like, now it's, you know, he's completely lost his humanity. That's what we're underscoring because he's a fly.
Yeah,
because
he's attacking the woman he loves.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, he's a dude that's driven mad, basically. Like, the fly is taking over his own mental capacity. Where in this, I mean, this is Martin Brundle taking revenge on the people that have, like, treated him like a science project. You know, this isn't the fly from The Fly 1. You know, this isn't a dude being driven mad by the fly.
Insect politics.
This is insect politics.
Do you think, like, the budget for the movie had anything to do with that? Like, maybe, I mean, I would think they would have a bigger budget for the first one than they did for this one. So maybe they just kind of had to work with what they had. But yet, because it was the makeup guy that directed it, he wanted to showcase and show off as much as he could.
I think that had to be part of the deal, right? It's like, we're going to do a sequel to The Fly. This time there's going to be more fly.
Yeah.
You know, and so
we'll give you a nasty-ass looking dog and a mutated creature at the end.
Yeah. And so there becomes, like, eventually the fly thing, puppet creature. I mean, that's unfair to call it that. I mean, that's how they accomplish it. But it's the mutant fly creature eventually gets loose and it never does get loose in the outside world, does it?
No.
Eric Stoltz does, but they bring it back to the set, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
He cocoons at the set.
Yeah, and he can get loose in the hallways and the stairwells and the air ducts of the set and jump down on people.
Jumping down on people. That's what this movie had. This movie had him on walls jumping.
Yeah.
Jumping down.
The Spider-Man jump.
You didn't see that from the first one.
There was the same scene of, I noticed that they repeated the fly jumping through the glass. Just the way he broke into Brundle's apartment at the end of the first one, carrying Gina Davis. I want to say he crashed through the glass, and in this one he crashes through the observatory. Like, flies! fly movie creatures. They crash through glass.
But that one that hits your windshield just splats.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I guess you're right. You know, now thinking about it, because I was sitting there, you know, again, when I was watching it, I'm like, man, you have to know the first movie to know that, like, the reason, you know, because Eric Stoltz starts to articulate the idea that, like, you should leave, talking to the girlfriend, you know, you should leave because it's unsafe for you. And then, but it's never really articulated the same way that the Jeff Goldblum character articulates. It's like, I want to love you, but the insect part of me is becoming more dominant, and insects don't know how to love, and I will hurt you if you stay. You know, I mean, that's a good scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's not like, you know, this movie doesn't come close to that. And it's like, okay, so why is he telling her to leave if he is, like, as you suggested, Travis, he still retains that part of his humanity? Because he does, basically. It's like his whole... I guess the motivation of the creature, once the creature appears, is to get back to the lab and try to run the experiment to remove the foreign DNA.
Yeah,
because you can tell he's got still got his human side when the dog comes after him. You know, yeah, he stops and he pets the dog.
I fucking love that scene when he pets the dog. It's so funny. The look on that dog's face.
I was waiting for Sarah McLachlan to start singing. Like those fucking sad commercials.
15-minute commercial.
Yeah. That was a patient actor dog sitting there as a puppet thing.
Yeah, exactly. Any other dog would be like, what the fuck? Get this shit out of me.
And I feel like, for some reason, I just feel like that must have had to been the full bodysuit, too. Just the way that dog was looking. Like, I don't think it was just, like, one arm or whatever. I mean, even though you only see an arm reach out and pet the dog.
He could have been looking at his trainer.
Like, something.
Am I ready to go? This thing's touching me. This thing's touching me. I'm waiting for my cue. Why can I leave?
Yeah, tell me to leave, please. Tell me to leave. I hate this fucking thing touching me. Tell me to leave.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, so, yeah, I mean, I guess it, you should be talking about, like, how he eventually, like, I mean, because this is what you're hitting the movie for, right, is the special effects. So how does he deal with all of these characters in his life that have caused him grief and suffering up until this
Throws them against walls.
You are a bitch. You are a deck. Throwing on the stairs.
Well, okay, so he deals with the female scientist.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do to her?
He, like, slashed her or something and then hung her up in a ceiling.
Hung her upside down on the ceiling.
So not, like, a big...
It was something for a doctor. It was something for the doctor to find. You know, it was one of those
horror there moments. Wasn't any kill shot, I guess.
Yeah. All right, demerit. What happened with the doctor who was a dick?
He got thrown.
That's right.
That was kind of a cool scene, though, where the security guard, Scobie, like, opens that door and you see the fly look at him and then throw the body towards the door that Scobie has to shut.
And the guy just hangs there.
Yeah.
Oh, this is when the security guards are hunting, of course, for the escape fly. Where I like it. It's like the CEO or Mr. Bartok's like, I don't want him killed. I want him just contained. So every single guard breaks out like a small machine gun. Like every corporation has the armory.
Exactly.
You know, well, where all the guys go to.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so then you've got Scobie himself. Abs him.
He gets his back broke.
Yeah, they do one of those kind of lame off screen, like, I'm going to bend you backwards with a cracking sound.
Well, they did it on screen. It just showed him going back.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The scene is like cut at his waist, and they're just pushing him back, going, oh, oh. It's like, get it?
So we're saying that Jason Voorhees has done this better twice.
Yeah.
Once in the bed.
And then he gets thrown ragdoll style right on the floor.
Yeah, that was supposed to be a joke where. Where Bartok is yelling for him, and then he comes flying.
I see what you did there. Bartok. Wait, is there another one that gets...
There was a other security guy, which is the other awesome death scene, where he gets trapped underneath the elevator, and the elevator squashes his head.
Right, yeah.
That was pretty fucking badass.
Yeah.
And then the one security guard accidentally shot the... other scientist guy, the Tribble or whatever his name was.
Oh, yeah.
Not a big makeup effects moment.
No.
It's not an exploding head. Exploding head by elevator. And then...
Himself. Well, we already talked about the guy getting spit on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I think that's your your gore. Used up their rated R gore moments in the face melting and the elevator head squashing.
I can't remember what happened to Bartok.
He went into the chamber.
He got switched out. Then he gets to turn into the fucking. He replaces the dog.
Yep.
With Bartok, which I thought was a beautiful, that's how you write a script. You know, this dude fucks you over, you know,
breaks your heart,
transforms your dog into a fucking mutant. So then in the end, you turn him into a mutant. Give him a taste of his own medicine. Yeah, dude, that's awesome.
And you give him his own biscuits and gravy.
His own scientists are looking down at him, studying him the same way they were the dog. You know? Yeah. I think that's poetic justice.
It's just. I was sitting there going, I get what they're going after. It's like, this guy, the lesson is don't be a douche.
But then, then they kept him. The ultimate thing, too, is not only did he transform him into this decrepit beast like the dog, but then they put him in a cage where everyone's just staring at him constantly, which is what Eric Stoltz went through his entire life. Just people staring and watching him and talking at him.
Which I have to say is, I thought was a better... I don't know. When he turned into that fly DNA mash guy that's crawling on the floor.
Like a maggot, kind of.
Yeah, was more impressive than the actual fly animatronic character that was walking around.
Mm. Oh. The rod puppet. That's how they did those legs, I'm guessing. I was looking at that when it's stomping down the hallway and the camera's falling behind him. There's a track overhead and there's these guys. Can I get that thing right there? Por favor, gracias. I thought there was one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about the CEO or his motivation for something. But I don't remember what it was. Anybody else have any?
Just to control the world.
Huh?
Just to control the world.
Because he's a CEO of a big corporation. That's what they do. They just want to.
They want to rule the world.
Yep. That's exactly what he's
doing.
So,
lessons learned from this movie?
Don't be a douche.
Yeah. Don't play God.
Don't play God.
Don't play God.
And don't have sex with a...
You can do that.
...science patient.
You can do that. That's fine. We're okay with that.
And that was also one of the things where what? Well, there were two things that made me go, what, in regards to the relationship with the girlfriend. One was that, she and Eric Stoltz eventually fall in love, have an intimate moment. It is recorded by the keepers, and she's fired, moved to somewhere else because she had sex with him. I'm like, wouldn't you keep her around them? Because at least she gives him a motivation. If he's happy, then he'll continue to produce. Am I just evil? That's the way I would do it.
And then would she be pregnant with another fly baby?
The fly three.
The fly three.
Pregnant with the fly three.
Fly three.
And the other moment, which caused some, I think, unintentional laughs, was that when Eric Stoltz saw the dog, he was very emotional and grief-stricken about it, the girlfriend walks in, and he's like, don't talk to me! I don't want to see you again!
He was thinking, that those people in that sector were okay with just looking at specimens that. He kind of figured.
Because I was like, man, he just went on a tangent for nothing.
Yeah, no, I think that escalated
quickly.
No, that was totally for something. Okay. If he thinks these other scientists are dicks,
I'm
he
going thinks home.
That she she's is too, but yeah. by association.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Right. She's looking at the dog.
Not to mention she had sex with a 5-year-old.
I know. I was waiting for that to get brought up.
That was kind of.
Yeah, but she doesn't know that. That's actually Martin's bag.
Yeah, he's a very intelligent 5-year-old.
Yeah, grown up quickly.
So what is he? He doesn't sleep. He has photographic memory. He's just a very intelligent.
Super kid.
Anything else on the fly too? Before we go and summon Igor. Igor. Igor, where are you at, sir?
Masters! Masters, the mail! I've got the mail! So many letters! Our followers are rising! Rising!
All right, thank you, Igor. Now it's, we're looking to see what we have here.
Igor.
There's like a, he leaves like a stank.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's like a stank bad.
First item comes to us from Facebook. Again, you can get a hold of us, facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show. Frequent listener Dom Cree says, he was chatting with a dude from Canada at work, and the first thing he wanted to burst out saying after he heard his accent was, hoser. Suffice to say, he didn't. But they got to chatting about the movie, all courtesy to listening to the Saturday Night Freak Show Strange Brew review. We should say Dom is from Australia, so hopefully, Dom, this isn't the first Canadian that you've met, and I'm glad that the Saturday Night Freak Show could be the lubricant in interpersonal, international connections.
Weird.
By the way, I'd like to say hi to Dom as the other fellow contributor to the Facebook.
Well, there's a new one, Jacob Kotner. Holy thanks shit. For listening, Jacob. He says, I love your show. So, Jacob, there's a shout-out to you. Thanks
holy
for checking
shit.
Out the Freak Show. And we hope that you write in some more often. I
mean, the good word is spreading.
All right, so time for Fly 2 wrap-ups.
You.
And it's me, because I'm in the chair. Brent is on his sabbatical, or he's off trying to find himself somewhere in the Himalayas. Fly 2. Okay, so, I mean, this is, I wouldn't call Fly 2 a good movie. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but, I mean, there's, well, it is and there is. There's, you can be a good, bad movie based on how well you deliver, like, certain exploitation elements. This is a cash grab movie, right? The Fly made money. So as a corporate, as 20th Century Fox, we're like, we need to make more of that money. We got to hit that well. Those people who came to the first one, they'll come see a second one. So what can we do? And it just feels in some ways that they are remaking the first one. I mean that by the fact that it seems like they're dealing with this problem throughout a good hour of the movie of trying to figure out how to solve something with the technology that Jeff Goldblum solved halfway through the original movie, so that we have to like reverse and then try to figure out how to get, like, you know, the teleporter to actually work, and then the new thing that you're introducing is what was left unfinished in The Fly, you know, the idea of merging the creatures together and seeing what that special effect would look like. I thought Eric Stoltz did a good job. I mean, he's required to be sensitive and sympathetic to your, you know, you're watching this guy go through this experience. He plays it, I think, pretty well. I don't really have a problem with any of the actors, except I think, you know, it's the writing that's a problem. It's just making these, like, you know, cardboard characters where, like, you're an asshole because you're written that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you can't tell why a guy is thinking, you know, that why I'm doing this. It's just I'm doing this because that's part of my character, is to be just a jerk. And this is what jerks do, and so I'm just going to continue to do it.
Budget scripting 101.
Yeah. I was disappointed by The Fly. If the movie is going to be like a monster movie mayhem kind of thing, we get some of it. I think, like, the face-melting thing is a highlight of it, but the actual rod puppet monster, I was like, is it the design or just the articulation or the way that it's lit? I think it comes down to, like, all three.
Do you think it could have been done better with, like, in that time period?
I think they did it better in the first movie.
Oh, okay.
But that's tricky to say because
he wasn't jumping around.
He wasn't, yeah.
He didn't have six arms.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, they weren't, the thing in the first movie wasn't supposed to do that much, so they could probably, you know, mm-hmm. get away with it in a better way. I mean, this was going to be like, I mean, I suppose, like, the aliens of The Fly, right? Now we're going to have them all over the place, man, jumping off of walls and all that stuff, but I don't think they pulled that off sufficiently. I mean, I think Chris Wallace as a director, I mean, I just don't think that he is a good director. I think he was sitting there kind of going like, well, at some point we're going to get to the makeup stuff and, you know, we'll be able to do that. And, you know, that's what his company does. But I mean, we didn't really have suspense. We didn't really have drama. There's a lot of, you know, like guys walking around and this thing are like, he's up on, you know, he's up on the floor above you and he's coming down to your location and, you know, just kind of yelling things at each other. But that's not to say that it isn't without its amusing moments. I mean, it's decently produced. I have seen worse movies. I have, you know, there's little bits here and there that are kind of, you know, I mean, they're okay, but when I say go out and see it, it's one of those things where it feels like if it had more, if it had been pushed a little further toward, like, you know, bonkers craziness, like somewhere in there, like this makeup effect just went crazy, or like, what the fuck are they doing this for, or something, it would have been like, you got to check this movie out. But so much of it is just, you know, killing time to get to the creature that I think I would say you'd have to pass. Jenny.
Well, I didn't hate it. I mean, I was it was entertaining. If you liked the first movie, I would say why not watch it? There's a lot of people, like I know Travis really, really likes the first movie. So if that's the case, yeah, watch it. I mean, it's nothing spectacular by any means, but it wasn't. It was entertaining, I think. I don't know. I probably wouldn't watch it again, but I saw it once, so now I can mark that off my bucket list. But
maybe next time with two eyes open.
Hey.
Oh.
Hey. But yeah, I didn't hate it, and if you like the first one, I would say check it out. Nick.
All right. As a fan of the first one, this one I just doesn't stand up to the what the first one was. I felt like it was, you know, as Colin said, it was more of a cash grab deal to where they're like, all right, we need to, you know, we made money the first one. Let's get with the second one, and let's do it with as little money paid out as possible. And you know, it felt like it. You know, the whole movie was done on like that one set. You know, it was the one area. You know, they didn't bust out or anything. You know, probably there was probably one other set that was when they were at the hotel or something like that. But other than that, you know, if I want to see a Fly movie, I want to see the Fly out there in the world causing havoc, not just in a
Flight 3.
I was not sold on the look of the Fly itself. That's what I was kind of waiting for. You know, the whole movie was like, okay, let's get to the good parts where, you know, this Fly is going to come out and he's just going to bust, you know, everybody's ass out here. And
did you ever see that movie Mortal Kombat?
Yeah.
The Lizard?
Mm-hmm.
Did the Fly remind you of, like, if they made a puppet of the Lizard? Because the Lizard's CG in that movie. Mm-hmm. Yes. You remember that? No? Like his face with the thing? No, maybe just throwing that out there. Maybe not. Disagree with it. No, I don't see it at all.
No. I don't see that. The creature just did not sell me. You know, I don't know if it was just too clean looking. I don't know. It just reminded me of like a creature made of pipe cleaners. To tell you the truth. And that's what
I've seen that. It's in a movie called Black Roses.
Oh yeah,
just check it.
a pipe cleaner monster, yeah. Huh? I can't shit all over the movie, but as it stands, you know, if you want to see a good Fly movie, see the first one, and if you have time to kill, catch the second one. I wouldn't say go out and watch it, but I'm kind of on the fence. It kept me entertained for the most part. You know, I haven't seen it since probably it first came out. But the you know, like I said, the dog scene, the dog has stuck with me, you know, all these years. I'm like, fuck yeah, I remember that nasty ass looking dog. But I would say pass on the movie. I would say pass.
I want to remind everybody that the first Fly movie had 10 minutes of a fly in a loft. You know? That's it. You know, so that's why I think this movie is a perfect sequel, because it's like, dude, more fly. Because, I mean, that's what you, I mean, I don't know, imagine, I hate, like, I don't know, a lot of the early 80s was always hide the monster. Even though these are the times where the monster effects were fucking good. And we were still hiding the monster for the last 10 minutes of the fucking movie. I love it when a monster can be seen. I mean, movies like Pumpkinhead and Predator. I like it when you could see a monster and really, really look at it, you know? That's all I've ever really asked of my childhood is, like, I want to see a monster. All glorious, whatever, half an hour of it. Or, you know, out of an hour and a half, you know, getting a half an hour monster is, like, the least you can ask for. I have always liked the story of Martin Brundle just because I think you do get something. I don't think you're just getting a duplicate of the original because, like, you know, you get to have that whole what it would be like to be raised as a science project. I think this movie has a lot more to do with that than it doesn't even focus on the love story. I mean, it tries to in a weird way, which to its, like, you know, to its detriment, I suppose. But at the same time, I think you get a lot of that whole... You get a lot of that, you know, if your father was a monster that created this great, like, invention, and you're the son of this person that you'll never get to know, and then Bartok acts as if he's your father and that he cares, and then in return, when it turns out that he just wants you to turn into the same monster his father was. I don't know. I just think this script has a lot more in it than I think the makers, like, even really paid attention to, or definitely it could have used some dramatic lighting, but I think that's the only problem. But, like, to me, Poltergeist 2 reminds me of the same thing. I mean, this is what a sequel in the 80s look like. It's like, turn all the lights on. You know, we don't have enough money to go dim lights. You know, let's turn the lights. I mean, I don't know. 80 sequels looked a lot brighter. Or maybe it's because we were getting into the 90s where they turned all the lights on anyway.
That's still happening. You should see The Descent 2.
Yeah?
It takes place underground, fully lit.
Oh, no.
So it's just like, man.
Don't see The Descent 2.
First one was great.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Like, the first one was great. Maybe we should show more, you know?
Yeah.
Turn all the lights on. But, I've always liked the creature design in this movie. It's weird. I've always studied it. It's a weird design. Because it's not, he doesn't look, because, I mean, the first movie, I mean, he looks like a giant fly.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this, he, you know, actually looks like a hybrid of a human and a fly. You know, he actually looks like that hybrid that we didn't get to see. I'm not saying it's exactly what a human fly would look like, but, you know, he's got six arms. But I don't know. I mean, I'll always be a fan of this movie just because, I don't know, the more Fly, the merrier to me.
Makes sense.
I would hope for a fucking remake of The Fly. The Fly is the man.
They've been talking about that for a while, I would say. But
they'd have to make it too much like the Cronenberg. It would, like, lose its luster.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't be as
You've already special. Done the definitive one, kind of.
They did. Well, they took a 50s movie and, like, made it the shit, you know, really. When it comes to remakes that redefined what a movie is, The Fly redefines what the movie The Fly is. But let's not forget, Return of the Fly in the 50s just had a bigger fly head and a bigger fly arm. You know, arm, so it was, arm. Yeah. So, you know, this is what Hollywood sequels are, I suppose, right? It's just showing more of the monster, which I will always appreciate.
And I think McFarlane actually came out with in their movie Maniacs line, they came out with the first fly figure, and I think they came out with, like, the chase version of it was the actual second one.
Yeah.
The second
movie.
They showed the fly too? There's a figure? Oh, wow. Yeah. I was gonna ask that if there was a if they'd made like
I know there's the Seth Brundle, I'm not sure, but yeah, I'll tell like look for that one. Sounds interesting. I'd get it. I love this movie. Fuck y'all.
I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it. I just
don't like Wassers
with a lot of beers. I did have some amusing moments. So I mean, yeah. So that's The Fly 2 on the Saturday Night Freak Show. Next week, it's my pick, and we're going to be watching another bad movie that I hope is like a good bad movie.
Excellent.
Called Star Crash.
Wow.
And that's next week, or The Adventures of Stella Star, depending on where you are. That's next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, the basement is going dark.